Welcome to the AKC Podcast, an audio resource for the King's community following the Associateship of King's College programme. The AKC is an inclusive, research-led programme of lectures which explore diverse religious and cultural perspectives. For more information, visit kcl.ac.uk/AKC. Lecture resources and further reading links for this lecture are available on the AKC Keats area.
And thank you everyone for attending today on a topic which, as has been pointed out, is extremely important, but also no less controversial. I'm going to be speaking about free speech against faith. Now, many a radical, many an upstart has raised their voice against religion, and that in itself is not novel. But what I'm going to get into is one step ahead of that. When the faith is not ours, when people of faith, let's say even people without a faith, criticize a faith that is not ours, where does liberalism stand there? And to what extent is that permissible conduct? To what extent does free speech lend itself to a critique of faith in that way? Let me begin, therefore, by drawing your attention to a decision, speaking as a lawyer, from the European Court of Human Rights some 25 years ago, the case of Otto Preminger versus Austria, where the court said that it is not possible to discern throughout Europe a uniform conception of the significance of religion in society, and that even within a single country, such conceptions may vary. Some may take the view you can critique, others may take the view you can't, and that it is not possible to arrive at a comprehensive definition of what constitutes a permissible interference with the exercise of the right to freedom of expression, where such expression is directed against the religious feelings of others. Now, the Otto Preminger case was quite interesting in itself, because that was a case where what had happened was that the provincial Innsbruck court in Austria had ordered a forfeiture of a film portraying Catholicism in a satirical form. Now, I'm going to be talking today about the Charlie Hebdo cartoons, which the defenders of those cartoons would say were depicted not in a clear intention or any intention to vilify or humiliate or in any way denigrate a particular religious faith, but actually to satirize religion. Now, you will know what being satirical is. That particular tradition emerged, in fact, in France, where people who wish to expose the hypocrisy and hubris of the Catholic Church or the nobility would poke fun and raise ironical caricatures about what religious people get up to. And coming from the country that I do, by origin, India, we have that all the time. We make fun of people who profess to be steeped in religiosity, but then, in fact, fall markedly short. And so that is the way in which satirical caricatures operate. And in this case, what happened was that this film was objected to by the majority of the people living there in Innsbruck, who happened to be Roman Catholics. And what the court said was this, that in order to protect the feelings of the majority, Roman Catholics, and to ensure religious peace in the region, it was important to ensure that the proper balancing of religious faith on the one hand and freedom of expression, that balance was struck in a way that ensured that scurrilous remarks were not made against a faith in this way. Now, that's what the court held, and the court was upheld by the European Court thereafter. But in the European Court of Human Rights, three of the judges took the following view. They said that we must, in these cases, take a position of moral restraint. Now, why do I speak about moral restraint? Either you allow free speech to be untrammeled in whatever way you want, so everything goes. If people are offended, well, That's the very test of the strength in a liberal society of free speech. Or you take the view that, no, there are certain things that you shouldn't be speaking about, in which case, let us have blasphemy laws. Now, in the stuff that I've written, I'm fundamentally opposed to blasphemy laws. I think the tradition within Europe, liberal tradition, and the majority of the countries take the views that we are not going to go back into the era, be it as it may, that that was an era where the Christian faith alone was protected through anti-blasphemy laws. But we're not going to go into a position where people are going to be prevented from criticizing religious faith. So that's not my position. Given that that's not my position, the only way you can put a brake to what you're allowed to say or not allowed to say is through exercising moral restraint. In the Indian constitution itself, so even domestic constitutions, in the Indian constitution, you find, for example, in Article 19.1a, the prohibition that any free speech is subject to, quote, decency and morality. In the German constitution also, you have in Article 19 also, you have the same prohibition. The subparagraph refers to references to public order, public health, public morals, and so on and so forth. So what the court in the Otto Preminger case said was this, that the duty and responsibility of a person seeking to avail himself of his freedom of expression should be to limit, as far as he can reasonably be expected to, the offense that his statement may cause to others. And that is to say, it may be legitimate for the purposes of Article 10, Article 10 gives the right to free speech, to protect the religious feelings of certain members of society against criticism and abuse. Now, my question, and the question I will pose to you all, is this, that what that suggests is that tolerance, if we are to tolerate other people's free speech, tolerance actually works both ways in a democracy. Of course, we must tolerate other people's free speech, but at the same time, the person wielding free speech has to be cognizant of the hurt that he may cause, the harm that he may cause. And what the court says is that this will be affected if violent and abusive attacks on the reputation of a religious group are allowed. The question that I'm putting to you, therefore, is this. What level of violent and abusive attack should be restrained? I mean, one can all too easily take offense at the slightest criticism of one's faith. What level of violent and abusive attack is to be restrained? The dissenting judges took the view that the attack must reach so high a level of abuse and come so close to a denial of the freedom of religion of others as to forfeit for itself the right to be tolerated by society. Okay, so that's by way of introduction. Now, let me take you to the Charlie Hebdo cartoons. These, of course, arose in 2015. You've all read about them. What took my interest was this. Hitherto, up to now, when you look at criticism of religion and the way in which protection has been given, what you find is, as in the Innsbruck court case, the Otto Preminger case, where the feelings of the majority are being transgressed or harmed, the courts come in and say, in the interest of peace and security, we will put a clamp down on this. Well, what about the feelings of the minority? What is the position? Does the identity of the group being vilified or criticized matter in these cases? And that's a question I want to leave you with, because that's what you have here. In 2015, the Cauchy brothers attacked the Paris offices of the magazine Charlie Hebdo for publishing disparaging images of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon his name, so as to, quote, avenge the Prophet. The targets were the cartoonists of this satirical French magazine. Four of them, together with five other employees working there, were killed. So in total, 12 people were killed by the Cauchy brothers. Although the Prophet Muhammad in the Charlie Hebdo magazines had generally been portrayed in quite generous and favorable terms, often the Prophet despairing at the actions of radical activists within Islam, there were occasions where the cartoonists had poked fun at the Prophet as well. And this tended to cause widespread offense to even ordinary followers of the Islamic faith. That some of these cartoons were patently offensive and bigoted cannot be denied. I will show you, for example, cartoons of the African sex slaves of Boko Haram. You will remember that in Nigeria, some 200 schoolgirls were kidnapped by Boko Haram. Many of them, the vast majority, as I understand it, have still not been returned back to their families. They've been married off, heavily pregnant, many of them unable to go back. And yet what happens is that the Charlie Hebdo magazine depicts them in this way. Another one shows a grotesque caricature of these girls as welfare queens. The point I make here is this, that it's arguable that attacking a marginalized minority community in France by bourgeoisie proprietors of Charlie Hebdo was not exposing the hypocrisy of the powerful through satire. I've already made the point that satire has a function in society, but what is the content-based freedom that is being exercised here that exposes the hypocrisy of a group? You'll know that the Algerian, Muslim, and other communities in France are extremely marginalized and do not feel part of France in the way that they want to or need to be. And this depiction, therefore, only added, they would say, salt into their wounds. And then on the following week's cover, so what happened was that after these 12 men had been killed, on the following week's cover, the magazine thought that they had no choice but to depict an image of Muhammad, although this time altogether more benign, in the form of a weeping prophet. There then followed a Paris march in the honor of the murdered Charlie Hebdo journalists, which was attended by the ambassador of Saudi Arabia and the prime minister of Israel and others and so on and so forth. In September 2020, 5 years later, the trial begins of these Kouachi brothers. It opens in Paris, 144 witnesses. And what happens then is that as the trial kicks off, Charlie Hebdo republishes the inflammatory cartoons, once again, that prompted the 2015 attacks on the opening day of the court proceedings. And it then went so, as you all know, nightmarishly wrong, because at the same time, a teacher in a school, as a way of pedagogy to try and inform his class about what was going on, showed these cartoons once again, at which point, as he left the school, he was attacked and decapitated by one of the parents who, whose child was there. And what I want to leave you with, therefore, is this, that the right to offend, you have the right to offend as a matter of law in a liberal society, surely does not mean an obligation to offend. And that is why the moral restraint is so important. Now, there's Charlie Hebdo. Very early on, it was, as I said, expert and specialized in depicting matters in a satirical form. And there you have a couple of gay people. And there you have another Charlie Hebdo cartoon. And these are your welfare queens, the sex slaves of Boko Haram being shown. And here is something. When the earthquake in Turkey took place, there was this particular depiction. Now, you might well ask, well, what has that got to do with satire? And here's another one shown at the same time. And then protests, of course, erupt throughout the world. If you are Charlie, then I am Kouchi. This is in Islamabad in Pakistan. And also in the Islamic world, freedom of speech, bias, deception, Tazim Islami, and we condemn anti-Islam acts, and so forth. And in Iran also, shame on Charlie Hebdo. So throughout the world, there were these protests, stop blasphemy, We are all Sheriff Kouachi now, say these protesters. And then you've got after the killings, you've got this particular publication. Now, even after that publication, after the killings, they continued. They came back with a vengeance. And here is a depiction where they're saying, well, look, what was it about us that really hurt the detractors of our cartoons so much? What's this little weapon? So remember, it's a satirical magazine. It has poked fun at Judaism as well, as I understand it, and other religions as well. But I make the point that these are well-heeled bourgeoisie intellectuals depicting something about a fate that is already marginalized in that society. And this is the cartoonist, Kurt. Kurt actually died very recently, didn't he? And when he died in 2021, he was asked whether he had any regrets. He said he had no regrets, because what his cartoons, Kurt Westergaard, what his cartoon tended to do was it served as a catalyst, which is intensifying the adaptation of Islam to what's needed. Now, on the question of adaptation, let me just say one other thing, which is this. Why do people think that a particular faith is fair game? And in this case, I'm talking about Islam. A faith which is a quarter of the world's population, a faith really which, a point that's rarely made, which actually was a competitor tradition within Western Europe. Don't forget, from 1492 to 1614, the Muslims were in Spain before Ferdinand and the others expelled them. In fact, it was the original multicultural society. It really was working superbly well until that exodus took place. And so very often when people feel, I find, somewhat embattled or under siege, I think that's partly to do with the fact that Islam came so close to being, you know, the major religion of Europe. But I ask you this question, and it's a question that I think it's fair to point it out here, if not here, where else? Why is Islam being criticized in this way? Well, Edward Luce has already given us two reasons. One is this, that in the majority, well, in pretty much all of the Islamic countries where Islam is the main religion, God help you if you are a minority. Because minority faiths, in fact, even if you are an Ahmadi, for example, even if you are a Shia in Pakistani's Sunni country or in, for example, in Saudi Arabia, you are imperiled and forever watching your back. So that's the one reason where Western society is dedicated to multiculturalism, to tolerance, to pluralism as the hallmark of our societies. When they see that happening, it does make them think. The second is this, that people believe that they are, this is Edward Luce's point, rightly or wrongly, less trustworthy because they don't integrate that well. They're determined to remain as, to use an American phrase, enclave societies, you know, societies that exist within societies, and that are sometimes more supportive of terrorism. But Edward Luce also tells us this in giving that account. He says that the Muslims' plight, surely for that very reason, if those are the reasons, surely for that very reason, tests whether liberal democracy means what it claims to mean. And that surely must be right as well. All right? So that's the reason about this particular faith being targeted in this way. On the question of free speech, I've said little about that. Well, there are three, basically speaking. There are three. This is after the trial. Now, this depicts Charlie Hebdo with a suicide vest being worn. Who is that speaking to? what particular constituency is that addressing? I mean, are the terrorists who go around bombing in this way reading Charlie Hebdo? Who is this directed to? All right. Here's another one. I've tried very hard not to show you any cartoon depicting the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon his name. You can look them up. They're on the internet. So the ones I'm showing you in order to really convey the thoughts that I have to is the ones which I thought was slightly more sanitized. And then here's the last one where Kurt actually, Westergaard, you know, is at loss to understand why it is that people have taken such offense. Now, on the defense of free speech, there are three major theories. The first one that you will all be familiar with, the marketplace of ideas argument. And of course, the chief exponent of that was John Stuart Mill. He has provided the most famous defense of free speech. And what he says is this in his chapter 2 of The Liberty of Thought and Discussion, that he argues that silencing any opinion is wrong, even if the opinion is false, because knowledge arises only from the collision of truth with error. Right, now this is very much the American view, isn't it? No society is more protective of free speech than are the Americans. If you look at the First Amendment, in fact, the drafters, the framers of the First Amendment, never intended it to include, go as far as it does. In America, no prior restraint is allowed. In fact, they allow you to say whatever you want, and if you've defamed someone or, you know, gone drastically wrong, then you might be sued. But no prior restraint at all, because the notion, the idea is that in the marketplace of ideas, you, which is not rigged, and you're not allowed to rig that marketplace by the state, you allow these ideas to arise, to coalesce, and through that collision will truth emerge. So when I was living in America, the phrase I used to come across a lot was that free speech has truth value. And what that means is that we have this argument, and the collision of ideas will mean that out of that, truth will emerge. It has truth value. All right, now that notion of John Stuart Mill, of course, the idea that you mustn't silence any opinion is open to question, because if you allow every piece of information, every viewpoint, to be given free vent, it prevents serious consideration to be given to every worthwhile idea. If every possibility is to be given in a free airing, then really you deprive yourself of a proper serious consideration of that which matters. The second reason that's given is this, that the notion that a strong idea of free speech should not be rejected, because if you do that, it will enable the state to decide the falsity of ideas. Well, again, this raises the question whether the individual is able to reject the falsity of state-imposed ideas in the first place. I mean, look at the things we've gone through in this country, Brexit and all manner of other things and so on. Is it really possible for the individual, the man on the street, to be able to oppose a state-imposed idea in any event? So the notion that a strong idea of free speech is absolutely essential, again, leaves something to be desired. The last justification is, of course, the one that, again, you'll be familiar with, deliberative democracy. The notion that a freedom of expression is an integral part of the deliberative process, where which encourages rational debate. Now, even if that is right, that deliberative democracy encourages a rational debate, even if that is right, I'm still left with this question: does it allow highly abusive criticism? I mean, that depiction of a chap with suicide vest and bombs around him, highly abusive criticism, it still leaves that question. That, I'm sure, would be allowed and allowed still in the United States. But as I say, the question as to the identity of the person that is being vilified, whether he be a minority community is something that has not been addressed up to now. It's all very well. If you look at all the cases that you look at, it's always a majority faith that objects to, for example, Christ being depicted in unfavorable terms, and the courts come in and say, that's not the way to do it because you're causing offense. So that's the point there. Now, despite my saying this, there are people who, despite my reservations, have taken the view that it is nevertheless very important for us to allow free speech in all such cases. Letsas, for example, has argued that there was no right not to be offended and that no balancing of interests was necessary. Now, you might want to ponder on that. He may well be right, that there is no right not to be offended and no balancing of interests was necessary. Another person, Duhat, in the context of Charlie Hebdo, in the context of blasphemy, said that he was against blasphemy laws, he was against restrictions on hate speech, because he said these are inherently illiberal. The kind of blasphemy that Charlie Hebdo, I'm quoting, the kind of blasphemy that Charlie Hebdo engaged in had deadly consequences. And that kind of blasphemy is precisely the kind that needs to be defended, because it's the kind that clearly serves free society's greater good. Your view on that is as good as mine, and we may debate that, whether it is the case, whether that's precisely the kind of free speech that serves society's greater good. So there are, as I say, people still who continue to argue, which is why I've myself felt it necessary to address this question from this particular angle. Let me then come to this in terms of these depictions. And again, I'm going over ground that I've already mentioned, but here's what I say about these caricatures. Take the cartoons of Charlie Hebdo. What do the cartoonists of Christian heritage know about Muhammad in the first place? How do they know what he looked like? And why do they care? Can we really be sure that the cartoonists were free from discriminatory intent in their exercise of freedom of expression? So that is, and I'm asking this question, whether really these cartoons could not be properly depicted as an incitement of religious hatred. One only has to look at the cartoon of a bomb, which I've not shown you, in a bearded man's turban, before venturing to answer this question. And this in turn forces us to question whether such cartoonists are deliberately picking on Muslims to teach them a lesson. Now, why do I say teach them a lesson? Oh, because the normal sort of refrain is, oh, don't be too sensitive, you know, aren't you a bit touchy on this? Learn to, deal with free speech and so on. And I think because that's the case, really, given their minority status, these are not equal opportunity offenders. They are not equal opportunity satirists. It's not the case that they spare no religion or creed when causing offense. Is humor really that humorous when it is at the sole expense of a minority group that already feels alienated? Let me lastly go through some cases address this. Firstly, there is a case of Wingrove versus the United Kingdom. This was a case in this country where the British Board of Film Classification refused to grant a certificate for the applicant's video, which had been held to justify on grounds of outrage to believers in the story of Christ. And the short film, Visions of Ecstasy, derived from the life and writings of St. Teresa of Avila. And she depicted the wounded body of the crucified Christ as a participant in the erotic desire of St. Teresa. The court had no doubt that this particular depiction was quote, calculated to outrage those who have an understanding of sympathy towards and support for the Christian story. Right? So this is the United Kingdom, and I entirely agree, the Christian story in the way that we all have handed to us is obviously attacked by this story. Another case, of course, I've mentioned already, is the Otto Preminger case, which involved the religious community in Tyrol. And the Tyrol community was, as I've mentioned already, fundamentally Catholic, and the court took the view that there had to be restraint there. A chap by the name of Zainab has said that what the court did was to sketch out a decisively liberal understanding of freedom of religion or belief by imposing duty and responsibility. Right? Now, I should point out here, again, as a lawyer who teaches human rights law here at King's, when I teach human rights law and I go through all the rights that you have, the right to free speech, Article 10, is the only right which has with it also concomitant obligations of duty and restraint, right? What you can say in public, in the public realm, is always subject to such concerns as public security, public morality, national security, and the like, and so on and so forth. All right. So no such right to completely free speech. Another case is Ryland Soucy versus Switzerland, which remarkable case. It involved the Raelian advert, Raelian religion, which pictured aliens coming down to Earth, and the advert said, finally, science has replaced religion, and the court took the view that this tended to, again, offend the Christian story. These are all majority fates. There is, however, I'm going to end on a good note, there is, however, a positive story, and the latest case is ES versus Austria, 2018 case, again arising from Austria. This involved a lady who went to give a public lecture on the basic information on Islam, where she referred to the Prophet Muhammad as a paedophile. And the reason she did that was this, because she explained that the Prophet married Aisha, his most well-known wife, in fact, the wife who was given the original copy of the Quran was given to Aisha. She was 6 years old when he was 56, and he consummated the marriage 3 years later when he was 59. So she went about telling that story, and she was convicted in Austria of disparaging religious doctrines. And what the court said was this, that this was completely misconceived, because it overlooked the fact that he had married a young girl at that age, completely overlooked the fact that amongst the great leading houses of Europe even, it was quite customary for a man to marry a very young girl. That did not imply that there was paedophilia involved in it. It was just the dumb thing. And that she also must have known, giving this speech in a public lecture, that there would be people there in public who did not want to listen to this sort of thing and would have been offended by it. So in that case, the court took the view that those who chose to exercise the freedom to manifest their religion, while it is true, cannot expect to be exempt from criticism, it went on to say they must tolerate and accept the denial by others of their religious beliefs, even if it's hostile to their faith, but then said the exercise of freedom of expression carries with it duties and responsibilities. And there was a duty to avoid, as far as possible, an expression that is in regard to objects of veneration, and the Prophet is an object of veneration, in regards to objects of veneration, gratuitously offensive to others and profane. So that is the latest case, which I think lends far greater support to a sort of approach that involves moral restraint, particularly at this particular juncture where we are in our history. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the AKC podcast. If you have enjoyed this lecture, please click subscribe in your podcast app to receive future episodes. AKC, at the heart of King's thinking.